What do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
We're back to that, huh? I say to you, what do you feel like doing tonight? And you say back to me, I don't know, what do you feel like doing tonight? Then we wind up sitting around your house with a couple of cans of beer watching a hit parade on television.
Let's go to movies.
Director!
This is a frightened city.
Wait for it! Director! Cut!
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for a new film talk show, Film Sociology, with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sosie!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Working the board today, my beloved engineer and former fan of the Mamas and the Papas, Melissa Davis.
Former fan.
It's been a rough week. Well, in some ways, it's been a very rough week. But I think we'll address that issue on a future show, actually, because of what happened on Oprah's show and the Today Show and the other show that would let Mackenzie Phillips on. Melissa and I had actually a lively discussion about separating the artist from the art, and I think we'll pick that up on a future program, so we'll get to that. But busy weekend in Indianapolis. The ISO is going on this weekend with their opening gala for the season. A little later on in the show, you'll hear my chat with Academy Award winning actor F. Murray Abraham. He'll be performing with the ISO this weekend doing Copeland's piece of Lincoln's Portrait. Jazz Fest is going on tonight and tomorrow and Sunday. Tonight at the Madam Walker Theater, tomorrow and Sunday on the grounds of White River State Park. You might see me emceeing this weekend. You never know. So definitely worth checking out for that. Of course, the Heartland Film Festival this past week announced their lineup, which is going to be running October 15th through the 24th, and we'll talk about that when it gets a little closer. And at least in my household, and I'm not sure about yours, but the sickness is the fever in said child is gone. Emma's feeling much better, so thank you to everybody who emailed and Facebooked asking how she was doing. That, and she had to suffer through some of Daddy's movies. Well, nothing bad, but when I'm watching something and she doesn't want to watch it, she will say, Daddy, can we watch something more kid-friendly? And I always say, you've seen Hamlet, Macbeth, and King Lear. What are you talking about? But I was watching, it was called His Kind of Girl, with Robert Mitchum, Jane Russell, and Vincent Price. So it's early 50s kind of crime story. And she rolled over and during one of her breaks from sleeping and said, who's that? It's Robert Mitchum. Well, what's he doing? He's trying to get Raymond Burr in jail. Well, why? And I was playing the story, and she's kind of,
what's he doing?
I rolled over and went to sleep.
Aww.
So thank you for letting me watch Robert Mitchum movies in my own house. Anyway. So she's feeling fine. That being said, I had to skip a couple of screenings. Hopefully I'll catch up on those next week. But here's a big shocker. The Dennis Quaid sci-fi thriller and the Bruce Willis movie Surrogates, not screened for the press in advance.
Oh. Is Elizabeth Banks in Surrogates? Because she keeps tweeting about it.
Elizabeth Banks?
Yeah. Really? That's when I'm like, she keeps tweeting about it. And
no,
I'm like,
that's no. It's no, I don't think. Well, you know what? I'll have to check. You know, if Mike Perry was here, he's the Elizabeth Banks correspondent for Film Sociology, among others. He would know. I just know. I remember I can remember her name, Rhoda Mitchell, who was the other wife in Finding Neverland. Are you IMDBing?
Yes. We're gonna find.
Okay, we're gonna find this out. But I know she's in it, and the woman who was the who was Keira Knightley's other sister in Pride and Prejudice plays Bruce Willis's wife. This is radio brilliance right here, just figuring this out online. But I will I tell you what, I'll go through the rundown while Melissa figures this out so we can continue with the show. I'm going to talk about the documentary, the September issue, as well as Lorna Silence, DVDs, Observe and Report, Ghosted Girlfriend's Past. All right, what's
she's producing it.
Yes,
or she has a hand. I don't know if she's the
executive producer.
She's one of David Nixay and Elizabeth Banks. So she's one of the woohoo. She's wheeling dealing
with Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
So
I see why she was promoting it so much now. So this is a horror movie?
No, it's a future. We have surrogates. It's somebody. The Onion referred to it. The Onion refers to it as a Wizards of Warcraft for grown-ups.
Oh.
You have your own human person surrogate, and you go out and do things. And there's a murder, and it's based on a video game, I believe. I don't know because I'm almost 40. I don't play video games.
You don't play video games?
Unless it's my daughter's Wii. Oh. See, I'm one of those. I scoff at video games, but I still have a stack of DVDs I haven't watched yet. So to
my dad's like 53, and he plays video games. Just have to throw that in.
Pong? No, two
no,
each.
No, real one.
Oh, gosh. Well, to each his own. All right. Let's move on with something that's opening in theaters in Indianapolis this weekend, the documentary The September Issue, which is a documentary about the making of the September issue of Vogue, which, as I actually learned recently, September is the January in the fashion world. And this particular issue, which was 2008, I believe, was the biggest magazine ever published. Apparently it was 600 to 800 pounds. Or as Abdul said earlier today, that's a book. That's not a magazine. So let's give a listen to the September issue.
Anna, which stop is
anyone coming to this run through except for me?
We're gonna go!
I'm with the internationally renowned editor-in-chief of American Vogue, Anna Wintour.
The single most important figure in the $300 billion global fashion industry.
She is watched more closely than the movie stars or the runway.
You are so influential with the designers.
If we get behind something, it sells.
Because of Anna.
Oh my God, Anna is like Madonna.
Look, it's gorgeous.
I personally would not put this one in the show. The other things you've shown us are more exciting.
Excuse me.
This type seems so large and pretentious. Looks like it's for blind people. There is something about fashion that can make people very nervous.
1 in 10 American women, almost 13 million people, will get a September issue of Vogue.
September is the January in fashion.
This is amazing.
Well, do mention it to Anna because she's killed half of it.
I'm not crazy about this one.
This I don't think we should do.
These are all
horrible.
She looks pregnant.
It looks cheap to me.
Look! No.
You know what? It's a famine of beauty. It's a famine of beauty, honey.
He says he didn't do the Colosseum dress. He says he didn't like it, so they didn't do it.
Everything you touch, you know.
What are we supposed to do with feathers this fall?
Just wear them.
I think my father really decided for me that I should work in fashion. He said, well, you want to be editor of Vogue, of course. So that was it. It was decided.
There's a glamour. Vogue, okay. Please, let's
lift it.
Fashion's not about looking back. It's always about looking forward.
Do we really feel that this is the most important message to put in a September issue?
I thought it was pretty.
Okay. I guess, yeah, this woman, Anna Wintour, who's the publisher, the editor-in-chief for Vogue magazine, was the inspiration for Meryl Streep's character in The Devil Wears Prada. I guess if you haven't seen The Devil Wears Prada, you'll get more out of this. I have to say, the first 20 minutes of this film I thought was completely insufferable because it is the introduction to all of these characters. And I'll say it, as somebody who I describe myself as fashionably challenged, but it was a lot of we're cool, we're fashion, you're not. And I'm not the only one that got this vibe from watching this. So you got to meet the central cast of characters who, by the way, if anybody thought The Devil Wears Prada had any stereotypes whatsoever, No, watch this documentary. These guys are from Central Casting.
Oh, this is a documentary.
Yes. Oh. And they live and breathe like this. The flamboyant black man who sounds a lot like the dude from Mannequin and later Designing Women. Yeah. Remember that? I know you did.
Oh, I remember that.
And there's the photographers that are very picky and what have you, and the models. And Anna Wintone. Wintour, who I guess is obviously a very shrewd and successful business person. She's also a miserable human being.
She's in the movie then.
Oh, big time. Oh, big time. And she and another person remind us that only two types of people wear sunglasses indoors. Blind people and so. And she's not blind.
Yeah.
Now, once you get past the first 20 minutes, it's actually an engaging documentary when it gets down to the nuts and bolts about how to make a magazine, the backstage politics, the juicy gossip. The one good photographer who used to be a – I mean, I shouldn't say good, but a photographer I could tolerate listening to, who used to be a model and now she's a photographer, and she spent a lot of time and money to make this spread, and she's fighting for space. And then there's Sienna Miller, whose hair Anna doesn't like, and the other photographer is temperamental and doesn't do what the editor says and goes over budget and does his own ways. That's kind of cool. I actually like that. And as somebody who's worked at a publication at one time or another, not Vogue, of course, but the ins and outs of trying to get stuff onto the page, that I liked. And that being said, even though I'm recommending the film, I still wanted to violently shake Anna, like a British nanny. It's not my world, and I'm not asking to be a part of it, and I don't want to be a part of it. And I guess if you can actually like something despite some pretty miserable human beings involved, and that's another subject I think we'll have to talk on. I mean, my wife and I have argued. I love watching crime films. I love watching films about organized crime and, you know, the Tarantino thug chic sort of thing. That's fine, but Devil Wears Prada and Shopaholic and This World, Sex and the City, that is just not my cup of white wine spritzer.
Not your thing.
Not my thing, apparently. But I'm still recommending it. This is what I think of the September issue, really.
Now that was a good movie.
Just got to get past the first 20 minutes and don't throw up in your mouth. I'm just saying. Also new in theaters this week, and we have no trailer for this, that's okay, is the film Lorna's Silence. And this is about an Albanian woman played by Arta Dobroshi, hope I'm saying that right, who marries a drug addict to obtain Belgian citizenship. And as we find out early on, this is part of a marriage for sale scam where and money is given out to spouse and to bride. And after his accidental and sudden death, she agrees to marry a Russian man so he can get a passport and get into the country. So it reminded me a little bit of Dirty Pretty Things, which was the Stephen Frears film with Audrey Tautou and Chiwetel Ejiofor and Sofia Okonedo, about that underground world of immigration, illegal immigration, getting in, getting out, getting the money, that sort of thing. And that world was actually pretty good. The film's probably a little long. That being said, there's a lot of long lingering shots that probably could have been tightened up for my personal taste. Arta Dobroshi puts in a good performance. She looks a little bit like Ellen Page with short hair, since we were talking about Diablo Cody's work off air earlier. But interesting world. And yeah, we have drug addicts and people that don't marry for love and for money. And I think I'd rather hang out with them than the editor in chief at Vogue magazine. So there, this is what I think of Lorna's Silence.
Now that was a good movie.
Yes, indeed. Okay, we're going to take, actually, but before we take the break, I forgot to mention this last week, and I should have. Mel Simon, of course, the local business giant here in town, when he passed away on the 15th. But I completely forget, and I think a lot of people forget, was he had his hands in producing some films. And I was looking through his credits of work, and wow, I've seen most of these.
This was in the papers.
This
pretty interesting.
Late 70s to the mid 80s, and mostly as an executive producer, and as it turned out, was not one of his best financial moves. But, you know, that's business. But I remember he was, uncredited executive producer in the thriller The Manitou, which starred Tony Curtis, a Tony Curtis thriller from the late 70s. Matilda, the Disney film.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yes.
The boxing kangaroo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
With which barely saw the light of theater's day. Robert Mitchum and Elliot Gould. Not to be confused with Gus, which was the football-kicking mule film, also from Disney.
Okay.
Also bad. When You Coming Back, Red Rider. Unpleasant play, unpleasant film. Brad Dourif in a starring role at that time. Seven, no, not that one. When a Stranger Calls, which was a horror film. This was the one, they remade it a few years ago. This is where the line, the call is coming from inside the house.
Oh.
But it was a babysitter who's terrorized by a killer, played by Carol Kane. And the cop was Charles Durning. So it was a horror film, but it actually had people in it. Scavenger Hunt, which I vaguely remember. Wacky comedy with people and a huge ensemble cast. Cloud Dancer, never saw. The Stuntman, this is his best work as a producer. This is the one with Peter O'Toole and Steve Railsback, for you Helter Skelter fans out there, and Barbara Hershey. Railsback plays an escape con who poses as a stuntman on Peter O'Toole's set. He plays a maniacal, diabolical, and fascinating film director. A great film. Richard Rush directed it. Made some money, but got an Academy Award nomination for O'Toole. Well-deserved. Great film to find on DVD. Executive producer on My Bodyguard, early Matt. You don't know My Bodyguard?
No.
Really? With Matt Dillon and Chris Makepeace and Adam Baldwin? I could have sworn you would know that one. Wow. Okay. Man with Bogart's Face, which I actually saw. It was okay. Zorro the Gay Blade, George Hamilton playing Zorro and his gay cousin.
Oh, wow.
And Lauren Hutton. Choo Choo and the Philly Flash, which was not that good a comedy with Carol Burnett and Alan Arkin. All three Porky's.
That's kind of cool.
You know those. Yeah, that's not bad.
It's a well-known franchise.
Yes, it is, and he did all three. And his last film, 1985, Euphoria. It's like Dr. Acula.
Okay.
No, it's not.
Oh,
anyway.
It's not? That
was
yeah, just, I don't know.
That was a pun. It was a play on words. Yeah. It's Euphoria.
Oh.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about, quickly, hopefully, what is new on DVD. You can email me at msocey@wfyi.org. That's msocey at wfyi.org. And I'm also on Facebook. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and wfyi.org.
Naptown is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis. And we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows as voted on by music journalists across the city and our on-track artist, featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know what I can do with that? I can do with that to people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. I'm your host, Matthew Socey. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. And I forgot, as of last week, this show is available as a podcast.
Yay!
Yes, so you can enjoy Film Sociology anytime you wish, Mom, Dad.
Awesome. Can I throw in another plug?
Please!
WFYI is on Twitter. Just search WFYI.
Really?
Yeah.
Do I get to Twitter?
Sure. You can if you want.
Do I have to set up my own account or can I go into ours?
You could probably, yeah. I mean, I don't have, I'm granting access, I guess. I don't know if I'm allowed.
Well, it's true. Obviously, it's true. You said it on the air.
Yeah. So that's all.
When
yeah.
in doubt, say it on the air.
We can definitely send out, not only, you'll get tweets about all kinds of WFYI stuff, but we'll be sure to do some tweets about, you
this?
Know. Yeah.
That's good.
Very cool. Find,
we could tweet on what music you don't listen to anymore and what films you haven't seen.
Sure. Oh, gosh. I'll send out those tweets.
That's a long list. Okay. New on DVD this week. I want to start with the one. This is actually one of the biggest surprises of the year for me. And hopefully more people will check it out on DVD. This is the other mall comedy called Observe and Report. And this is from the guy who directed Foot Fist Way. But it stars Seth Rogen as a mall cop, not the other guy, who just has a little too much power and a little too much ego as he runs a suburban mall. It also stars Anna Faris as a woman who was a victim of a flasher, and he's going to bring him to justice and bring Anna Faris to his heart. Ray Liotta, Cilla Watson, Michael Pena. That would be a different movie. Also are members of the cast of this film. Give it a listen.
Hey! I'm here with Ronnie Barnhart, one of the security guards here at the mall.
No,
who can
cut.
Hopefully...
ma'am, I'm the head of mall security. You should do that again and say it right.
It was horrible!
I'm Detective Harrison, Conway Police. We're gonna catch the guy that did this.
Ah, what?
It's clear that this pervert plans on coming back here murdering Brandy.
Oh my god! Is that gonna happen?
It's gonna happen.
No, it's not gonna happen.
You gon' pay.
Brandy, you're the only thing in this mall worth protecting.
Brandy, do you have a boyfriend in your life?
Shots! Yeah! That burns so good. Oh, yeah, again.
You are so gorgeous.
Part of me thinks that this disgusting pervert is the best thing that ever happened to me. This is my chance to be great.
What have the police ever really done? Nothing good.
I'm in charge of this. Dennis, you're my second in command. Humans, you guys are my infantry. When he dies, God gave me another one.
Okay. Awesome. Okay.
I swear on my soul, I'm going to catch this guy.
¿Qué pasa, Ramon?
Quiere hablar conmigo, pero no lo entiendo, no sé en inglés.
Sí. This guy did it.
Well, what'd he say?
I don't know. I don't speak Spanish.
Hey!
That's okay.
Oh, that's it.
That's enough of that for now.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. This film had a bad rap for a couple things. One, it came out after Paul Blart Mall Cop, and apparently you can't have two Mall Cop movies in a matter of a few months.
It was kind of confusing.
It was. See, a little bit of that. This one, he doesn't wear a mustache, and Fat Guy doesn't fall down and go boom. This is a much darker piece, and I think a lot of people were going in expecting another goofy mall comedy. Which it is to a certain degree, but I would actually compare this more to Taxi Driver than Paul Blart Mall Cop. This is Seth Rogen plays a guy whose power has just gone to his head and is willing to do anything to get the girl that he loves. And there's a really offensive scene with drunk Anna Faris and Seth Rogen that. I just can't. I can't look at my producer and bring this up. Oh. So that's all right. I'll tell you later. But that's probably the quote-unquote low point, lowbrow of this film. And then there's a thing about a subplot involving a robbery at the mall. But this is a man who's deeply, deeply troubled. And I think that's what makes it more entertaining than, say, the other film that was basically Die Hard in a Mall. I like Rogan. I haven't jumped off the bandwagon yet. Yes, I'm one of those few people that actually likes funny people. But no, I'm actually pretty good. And I'm jealous because, you know, he got to be with Katherine Heigl and Anna Faris in a matter of 8 months in two films, cinematically, of course. But no, give this film another chance on DVD. There's going to be a lot of different features on it and the making of, and just be prepared. This is a much darker story than it appears to be. So this is my thoughts on Observe and Report.
Now that was a good movie.
Also on DVD this week, the latest romantic comedy from Matthew McConaughey. Melissa, he doesn't do anything for you?
No.
No? Well, ever?
No. Never? He seems a little greasy to me.
Wow.
Kind of greasy and hippie. I don't know.
Well,
I don't
when
like
when
the
you
greasy.
Get, when you get, well, when you get busted playing the bongos naked by the cops,
it's
I guess
too weird.
A little hippie thing for it.
It's too out there for me.
two out there for you?
Wait,
you're a Tom Green fan. And
he's funny. I don't think, like, I could sit with Tom Green and we could have, like, an awesome conversation and laugh a lot. And
Matthew would just try to
He's just pretty. Yeah, like, right. We just look at each other and I'd be like, okay, you're pretty. And then that'd be it. It would be
Boy,
like,
that's a great interview.
It'd be an empty relationship.
I see.
So
well,
I couldn't go there.
That's all right. Well, the whole marriage thing, too.
Oh, well.
Yeah, this time around, he is a lingerie model photographer. Yeah, he's a photographer. He gets to photograph scantily clad ladies. So, yeah, a guy wrote this. And he goes to his brother's wedding and comes across a woman from his past, played by Jennifer Garner. And guess what? Ghost of Girlfriend's Past, that is, of course, a play on words with A Christmas Carol. And guess what? It's a Matthew McConaughey movie that's a lot like A Christmas Carol. And oh, by the way, The Ghost of Jacob Marley is Matthew's uncle, played by a very oily Michael Douglas.
Yee.
Give a listen.
Good morning, Connor. Versace is on one.
Okay. One, two, three. You're ravishing. Kiki, Nadja, Charlize, it's not going to work out for us.
Tell me you're not breaking up with me on a conference call.
Don't listen to these ladies. They are crazy.
Connor, we can still hear you when you cover the camera,
oh.
You know.
I'm psyched you came. I didn't think you were going to make the rehearsal.
Yeah.
Connor Mead.
Jenny Parati.
If you do anything to detract from her wedding, I will sneak into your room in the middle of the night and cut off your favorite appendage.
Well, the first part sounds nice. This is going to be tougher than I thought. I'm here to warn you, kid. Tonight, you're going to be visited by three ghosts. Look away. You're dead. Whatever happens to you tonight is for your own good. Now we're talking.
Hi, Connor!
Who are you?
Oh, I'm like the ghost of girlfriend's past. I could take a little bit. I'm going to take you back through all your past girlfriends.
We dated for 2 days.
For an hour.
For 48 seconds.
Oh, my God, it's Jenny.
Hey.
Watch this move.
Oh, we'll go out.
We'll have a little dinner.
What do you say?
We got to button you up. You look like a gay pirate.
This is the moment you truly fell in love with Jenny. You completely let her in. So you did what you do best. You left.
From New Line Cinema.
I'm sorry about us. How it played out.
You're actually apologizing, aren't you?
What if you could relive your past?
I'm gonna keep it forever.
I don't think I said that.
I'm gonna keep it forever.
Okay, I get it.
What if you could listen in on the present?
When I see him again, I am just right back to where I was before.
What if you could change the future?
Pictures of you.
No. You're supposed to be with me.
She was always supposed to be with me.
What we used to be.
No! No!
Matthew McConaughey, Jennifer Garner, and Michael Douglas.
I can't believe it. We kept it.
Ghosts of Girlfriend's Past.
I'm forever worried now when I see a romantic comedy with Mr. McConaughey in it because he made a film that really made my skin crawl when it came out called How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And I've reamed on this film several times in the short lifespan
of this
program.
Do you still like Kate Hudson?
No. I like to look at Kate Hudson. Mm-hmm. I would like to beat up her agent and find her better scripts.
Yeah.
She's got to do something else. But I'm going to save that rant for another time. But really, so anytime I'm worried that it's going to be a psychotic romantic comedy. I mean, Fool's Gold, not so much. Failure to Launch was. I'm sorry, but don't you wish all shut-ins look like Matthew McConaughey? And one of my all-time favorite cinematic gene pools. Is the fact that his parents are Kathy Bates and Terry Bradshaw.
Sure.
There must have been some vitamin E in dinner that evening, I have to tell you. So this time around, it's not as psychotic as some of his previous work. I mean, he and Garner, I'm sure they had a lot of fun making this, and bully for them on that. But there is the weekend in the country with the wedding. And by the way, the bride in this movie, his brother's bride-to-be, stressed out.
Oh.
Bridezilla.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm
sure another one of your favorite movie characters, the the frantic, psychotic, neurotic Bridezilla.
Yeah. Well, it's never been done before. Ever.
No.
Ever.
So there's that. And her parents, by the way, it was nice to see, although they have very little to do, but her parents are played by Ann Archer and Robert Forrester. And one of the things that bugged me as a little tiny geek is you have a movie with Michael Douglas and Ann Archer, and you don't have any nice little nod to, say, Fatal Attraction. Hopefully there's a deleted scene that has that. You can't float past her and give her a pinch like in the old days and say that you won't be ignored. Of course they knew.
They might not.
Come on, the director can't be that dim. And I don't know, maybe the whole Ann and Michael hugging each other going at the read-through going, good to see you again. What's it been, 1987?
Yeah, that might be a clue.
And by the way, Fatal Attraction, if you're cheating on Ann Archer, you're an idiot. So, okay, so that being said, I will say this. Michael Douglas is actually one of the better things about this film. He does use his oiliness to his advantage, playing a guy who looks a lot like Robert Evans, the famed oily producer. He's fine. But, yeah, I guess this is a film that works if you've never, ever grasped the concept of A Christmas Carol, ever. Ever, ever, if you've never read it, or seen any other film that has made fun of A Christmas Carol in any way, shape, or form. Otherwise, it's Matthew making another movie. It's his version of A Christmas Carol, basically. So, overall, this is what I think of it. This is what I really think of it, seriously.
Turn it off!
Yeah, please do. Okay. On DVD, oh my goodness, there's some other titles that are on DVD, and also this is a part where I ask if you owned a Blu-ray. I know you're excited about this. Finally on DVD, the Anna Nicole Smith Story.
Oh, good Lord.
Did it take that long?
No, I won't. That did take a while, didn't it?
I guess.
I think that would be, like, right to DVD.
Exactly.
Is this the one with the actress, and she was a singer? I think it is. I forget her name, though.
That's really okay. Oh, also on Blu-ray and regular DVD this week, the futuristic animated film Battle for Terra, which nobody saw. I did. Basically, it's the aliens invading homeland, except it's in reverse, and humans are the aliens. Not that good. Blu-ray, the complete Monterey Pop Festival for you Jimi Hendrix, Otis Redding fans, among others. That's pretty good. On Blu-ray, Hot Fuzz. Finally. Love Hot Fuzz. No?
Yes? I don't even know what it is.
You don't know Hot Fuzz is from the guys who gave us Shaun of the Dead? Oh, work on that. Really fun stuff. Really fun stuff there. Basically, thanks to that film, I can't see another cop movie for at least another decade, just like I can't see another zombie movie for another decade, thanks to Shaun of the Dead. Although, next week, Zombieland.
Oh.
Actually looking forward to that. Okay. Shaun of the Dead on Blu-ray. Also on Blu-ray, Star Trek The Next Generation, the motion picture collection. Okay.
Oh, my.
Yes. Also, a new complete collection of Wallace and Gromit on Blu-ray and DVD, because the new Wallace and Gromit film, Wallace and Gromit, A Matter of Loaf and Death, is out on DVD. And I have to mention this because I was told by a certain somebody in my house that the day Wizards on Deck with Hannah Montana comes out on DVD, I'm going to have to put it on her birthday or Christmas list.
Aww.
Who's that for?
I think it might be for Emma.
Make it double for me. So, all right, we're going to take a short break and end my chat with F. Murray Abraham. You can email me at msoci@wfyi.org, or you can check me out on Facebook. I'm Matthew Soci, and you're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Naptown is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis, and we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows as voted on by music journalists across the city and our On Track artist, featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
We got guests.
You got what?
Guests. Guests.
Guests.
Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
And this is Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Soci. You can email me at msoci@wfyi.org, or you can check me out on Facebook, and eventually I guess I'll be tweeting. We'll see. Academy Award-winning actor F. Murray Abraham is in town this weekend. He'll be performing with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. He'll be narrating a piece from the Copland piece, Lincoln's Portrait. Of course, he won an Oscar in 1985 for his 1984 performance as Sadietti in Amadeus. And on many, many other films, has bounced back from the stage to the screen to voiceover work. And last week, I got to talk with, he lets me call him Murray, with Mr. Abraham to talk about being in Indianapolis with the ISO and Amadeus and throwing out old obscure movie titles from his past because I can. Here's our chat.
Well, what's on your mind?
Well, first off, I guess I should, how should I address you?
Your Majesty.
My liege, I was thinking, but...
my name is, I'm half Syrian, half Italian, and it's hard to please both sides of the family. So my father's name is Frederick, and my name is Frederick, but I decided to use an F because the Syrians call me Farid, and the Italians call me Federico. So with the F, I pleased everybody.
All right, so F. Murray.
That's fine. Murray is just dandy.
Murray, okay.
Now do I call you?
Matthew.
Okay, Matthew.
And so obviously you played a lot of Wasp, obviously, with your background.
I played a lot of Wasp. Yeah, I don't think I ever played a Wasp in my life.
How did you get hooked up with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra?
I've been doing this for years, all over the world.
This particular piece?
And I think that this particular piece, you know what we're doing, right? The Copland piece?
Lincoln's Portrait.
Yeah, it's just, it's very meaningful to me. And the first time I ever did it was here in town with the New York Philharmonic. And I was carried away. I really was very moved by that, by those words. And I had done some studying. I had played a Lincoln once, believe it or not, speaking of Wasps.
A Continental?
A Continental Lincoln? No. You know, that was a great-looking car.
Yes, it was.
It was a wonderful car at one time.
Back when cars were a piece of art.
Well, yeah, you're talking to a car fiend. I agree with you. When you could, we could spot cars by the sound of their mufflers. They were that individual. I don't know if you know that.
I grew up in an automotive town up in Michigan, so yeah, I remember those days.
Where were you, around Flint?
Yes, I grew up in Flint. Got out with all my fingers.
Yeah, well, my people were steel workers in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
We made the steel. I don't know. You have your own steel mills in Indiana. I know that.
Well, not really. Gary's a wasteland nowadays.
Well, have you been to Flint lately?
Yes.
I mean, it's really too bad. It's a depressing thing. A friend of mine who lives there, when I did a concert in Detroit, it was one of these concerts. Only this was an interesting concept. A concert. It was, I'm trying to think. It was, you know Stravinsky's Story of a Soldier.
Yes.
Rather, his music for it.
Right.
Well, Vonnegut has written an adaptation. He said that the original story has nothing to do with reality. He said the music does, the discordant, the wonderful, driving, strange, and absolutely brilliantly original music. I worship Stravinsky. This is a tough piece of literature and writing. He hated war, Vonnegut did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extraordinary. I don't know why it's not done more often instead of the original. But I was doing it in Michigan, and a friend of mine took me out for a ride out by the lake to have a nice fish dinner. And I saw all those beautiful mansions, all for sale.
Yeah. Now, how often do you get to do pieces like this with symphonies?
Well, it's whenever I get calls, and if I'm not making a flick, or if I'm not doing a play, I jump at the chance, because I don't know how to explain it. If you have a chance to be on the stage with an orchestra, you have to do it. You have to arrange it if you have any pull anywhere. Just to be on the stage with them while they're working out.
Now, is this a piece where it's in between the songs, or they're playing under you as you're reading?
It's going to be between and during.
Ooh.
It's just thrilling.
That's got to be a rush.
Oh, I can't begin to tell you. And I've worked with some of the greatest in the world. And it's thrilling. I mean, really thrilling. It's like a different kind of a thrill, because there's no... It's not an intellectual activity. It's far beyond that. It's really deeply, it's visceral, but at the same time, it's transporting. It's transcending. Great.
Well, it's interesting because when you do a film, unless the director pumps music onto the set during a shot, I mean, that's one thing. But to be able to have, I mean, the soundtrack is behind you.
Yeah, the only problem with it, I mean, the danger, not the problem, is that if you miss your cue, you're in trouble because the orchestra doesn't try to vamp and catch up. It's hard to do with 90 pieces, you know.
It's not a jazz combo.
It's great. It's also a completion of sorts in terms of an actor, because there are things that an actor in the classical works, for example, any Shakespeare, any musical piece of work, Molière, for example, or even some of the beautiful music that's in Tennessee Williams, you're never going to be able to achieve what music achieves. You try to, vocally and also spiritually, but you can't accomplish what Mozart does. It's just a different thing. But the idea that you can combine them, it's a kind of a gift, I must tell you. It's like a little present. And the whole thing is, I'm sure, because I did that movie so many years ago, Amadeus.
25.
I mean, can you imagine? That thing is still alive. People still love it.
Yes, I can, actually. I was 14 when that film came out. I remember being the youngest one in the theater by about 30 years. And think, not only did this film introduce me to and open my mind to classical music, but I went, wow, who is this guy? You know, the guy from Animal House is great, but who is him? Who is he? And that was, for a lot of people, that was the world introduction to F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah, it was a treat. It was a gift. The problem is, of course, it's not being able to do another one like it, you know?
No, Amadeus 2, the final years.
Well, my son said that there should be a sequel where Amadeus is where Mozart's son grows up and wants revenge. He wants to call it Amadambo. Anyway,
don't give Michael Bay any ideas. Now, when you filmed that, did you do the young Salieri first or the old one first?
The old one. I did all the old stuff first. We did it in 3 weeks.
Wow. How much time on the chair for makeup?
4 hours, 4.5 hours each morning.
Were you able to sleep?
Well, I was pretty intense. I don't know how to tell you. I'm a pretty intense actor anyhow, but I was completely dedicated to that, and I lived alone when I was in Prague to be away from the company. It was all completely focused. I think the biggest mistake I made, if you can call it a mistake, is expecting to, from that point, do that kind of work for the rest of my life in film. That's kind of naive.
Well, what was the silliest script you got after winning the Oscar?
Oh, gee, there were so many that I refused. I should have done them just for the money, if not anything else. But they were just silly. They made me out to be a villain. I don't think Salieri is a villain. Well, I think he's a real human being.
Well, Carl Malden said bad guys don't wake up thinking they're bad guys. They got a job to do.
Good old Carl Malden. I just saw One Eyed Jacks not long ago.
He's so good in that. Yeah, I just watched Baby Doll. Not a film to watch with your wife, but
that's another good performance. Was that Kazan?
Yes. It's funny you mentioned intensity. My daughter, she's 7, and she said you were intense in Muppets from Space.
Isn't that great?
She's like, you're talking to him? I went, yes, that's part of Daddy's job, believe it or not.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
That's so flattering. Isn't that a great age?
Yeah. She's. It's funny. My wife is an actress, and any role that my wife plays, my daughter wants to play. So she refers to herself as Baby Gertrude and Baby Parthy. And last year, Lynn got to do Lear, and Emma said, I'm Baby Goneril. And we went, no, you're not. No, no, no. That's wrong, and on so many levels.
Dia.
Yeah, don't give her any. I directed that, but she doesn't remember. Thank God.
You're an actor.
I try. My wife is equity. I'm independent. And if it's a choice between my wife's guaranteed equity money and or my vanity projects, I let the missus work.
Works the work. So. I mean, you can see that for some of the films I've done. I mean, after a while, you think, well, I'm not going to wait anymore for a good film. I've got to make the rent.
Well, even
after a while, you think, oh God, do I have to do this? And you do.
But I think even films that maybe there's not high profile roles, but when I see you in something like Insurrection and Surviving the Game, I'm like, well, he's going to be fine. He knows what he's doing.
Well, I love the idea of people asking me, like, well, why are you doing those movies? Well, that's kind of a dumb question. I mean, you do what you have to do. But if they asked me to do other films, I would do them. But it seems to me that my life is really revolves around the theater here in New York. And I do films when I have a break from the theater.
As opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, but it's a nice life. Mm-hmm. Just one of those. I love Shakespeare, and you can't live on Shakespeare, not in New York anyway. I don't think you can anywhere. I mean, I don't think they pay very well.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it after Amadeus that you wound up doing a lot more classical theater?
Oh, yeah, I was doing it before, but afterwards it was amazing how it kind of guarantees your work life. It's hard to believe. I mean, I'm a good actor, but there are a lot of good actors around. You know, mm-hmm. you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not selling myself short, but you know what I'm talking about. You got to have some luck in this business.
Sure.
And I've had some luck, but ever since I won the Academy Award, I've been working practically every day. It's just been wonderful stuff off-Broadway, experimental stuff with Richard Foreman and Tom O'Horgan and, gosh, I guess everybody in town. I really had a great time. And I'm going to continue having a great time.
Well, it seems like it's been, from an artist standpoint, to be able to do stage and screen and voiceover and narration, so you're not stuck in a rut. You're not stuck doing a soap or a sitcom for years and years and years.
Yeah, it's the best.
And one thing that's always been was cool for me, especially after seeing Amadeus, is you were one of that guys. And when I saw your earlier work, I'm like, oh, my – I was a caffeinated 15-year-old. So I'm like, oh, it's the Amadeus dude and – Scarface and Serpico and the Sunshine Boys. It was one of those, I have to go back, and this is before the internet, I'm like, I have to go back and find out what else this guy has done to lead up to this.
Oh, you got to take a look at the Ritz.
Yes, I saw the Ritz at too young of an age. I should revisit it again now that I'm more semi-mature.
Well, it works better on the stage, I think, but it's not a bad picture. It is great.
Yes. And I especially liked your work in Mighty Aphrodite.
Oh, thanks. That was fun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you couldn't have seen any of my stage work, though, because I...
Well, you're still doing some stage work, right? I just need to go east.
Yeah. I've been doing Ethan Coen's plays. Those are pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know anything about them.
What are some of the plays?
Well, he's written 6 plays, and I've been in 4 of them.
So you're one of the community players.
They're 6 one-acts, short pieces, and it seems like we've got a hookup, and it's great because they're funny and they're brief and they're... What did Chekhov call his one-act plays? Vaudevilles? That's kind of what these are.
Right. Now, did I see you just completed a picture of Barbarossa?
Yeah, it should be coming out next month.
This isn't a remake of the Gary Busey, Willie Nelson Western, right? This is completely different?
Gosh, I didn't know about that.
1982.
No, I don't know that picture. I know Gary. We worked together.
Mm-hmm.
In Surviving the Game.
Yes.
We really had a good time, he and I. I mean, you've heard stories about him, and I...
Yeah, we've seen him on TV, yeah.
I didn't see any of that stuff. I mean, we had a great time. We became quite close.
I mean, the guy doesn't get an Academy Award nomination for nothing.
Well, that was a wonderful performance.
Yes. What is this Barbarossa about?
It's a historic character who actually tried to unify... Italy, but under his command, Barbarossa came in from the north and tried to take it over. And it's this heroic story of a stand that these farmers made against this brilliant and great general, and these Italian farmers won. It's a historically in Italy, it was a great moment in their history.
And you shot it in Italy?
Yes, I do a lot of in Romania and Italy. I do a lot of work with the Italians. I've been doing it for ever since before Amadeus, actually. It's kind of my second home.
And you got the...
this picture I'm doing now is part Italian. It's Italian and Canadian financed.
This one is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The one I'm working on. And Barbarossa was strictly Italian.
Oh, I see.
And that was the 5th film I made with that director, and I'm going to make another one with him next year in Italy and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
That, too, is a co-production between Canada and Italy. Don't ask me the connection, but There it is.
It's all right. I remember going, my family and I went to Stratford, and there was the Canadian Chinese restaurant. Whatever it takes. What's the picture you're working on now?
This is Giancarlo Giannini, and I are old friends.
Ah.
He wrote this script for us, and he's starring in it and directing it as well, and we're shooting it just outside of Toronto. I'm in town for only about 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
I had a break, and I came here to be with the family. But we're shooting up there, and then when we finish up in Toronto, we'll go back to Rome and finish up there.
We'll
be done with the picture on the end of October.
What's the title?
It's several titles. It feels a little like Woody Allen, the X Project.
Or untitled Woody Allen.
It's called Looking in Obituaries.
Yeah, it's going to be renamed in the States.
It's a good script. He did well. He wrote it, too.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's an inventor, too, by the way. Anyway.
What did he invent?
He is an electronic genius.
Really?
He does inventions for his own house, for his own sound system. And it's a remarkable man. He really is, aside from being a remarkable ladies' man. They just fall over their feet when they see him. He's had a wonderful career. His work with Lena was just sensational.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Brett Mueller.
Yes.
I worked with her on a picture that she wrote.
What was the picture?
It was called, let's see, Enough About Romance, Now Let's Have Some Sausages. I mean, that's what she writes. But it was, my co-star was Sophia Loren.
Oh.
And she played my wife, Lover, and I got to kiss her a lot of times.
Wow. You wish Kubrick was directing that day.
Yeah.
Take 130.
I don't know if I understand Kubrick's last flick. I was very disappointed, and I'm a real big fan.
Eyes Wide Shut? I was with it until the third Last Warning.
I just thought, this is becoming predictable and dull. And he's never dull.
No.
I mean, his early stuff is still great. The Killing is still
love
great.
The Killing. It's so funny when people, I show that to people, and I think they're used to the wide, huge, you know, almost bleak scope of something like The Shining in 2001, but The Killing is so good.
Yeah.
Great heist film. Now you got me thinking of Sterling Hayden, and I'm interviewing you.
Sterling Hayden, wow. Continues to churn it out, doesn't he? Mm,
always timeless work. It's funny,
have you seen my wife discovered it recently. The original upon which, speaking of Sterling Hayden, Airplane was based?
Oh.
The Zone, or what was it?
I thought there were a couple.
Zero Hour,
yes.
Have you seen it?
Not in a long time.
Oh, man, it's so funny.
So the Zuckers really were taking notes watching that.
No, they were lifting lines. The names are the same, too.
Oh, really?
At one point, Sterling Hayden say, it's a fine time to quit smoking. That was his line originally. And he's very serious. I mean, of course, they're all very serious. But it's great. I mean, you got to see it.
I'll look for it because it was funny. That was 1980 when the Airplane came out.
Oh, that couldn't have
out.
Been that late. Really?
No, Airplane. Yeah.
Oh, Airplane. Yeah.
Yeah, Airplane. But what I mean was you had all these serious actors like Leslie Nielsen and Lloyd Bridges and Robert Stack, and they were able to get a second, you know, second wind of their careers doing that stuff.
Well, they were willing to make fun of themselves. I thought that was very bold. And also that the credit goes to the director for making them feel they can get away with it, I think. They were wonderful. Bridges was sensational.
Yep.
But there was another line, the doctor on the plane. It was legitimate. It was so funny.
I speak jive, no.
You have to find a doctor, but a doctor who didn't eat fish.
Oh, right.
It's a real, it's an honest to God, anyway.
Hey, let's not forget about your tongue work in Loaded Weapon 1.
That could have been better. Anyway, that's really fun.
A few months ago, I actually found on DVD and bought and watched again Name of the Rose.
Oh, yeah.
Very scary in that, you are.
6 months shooting. Sean was terrific.
And that was the first of two times working with Sean.
Yeah, he's a good guy. At least he was with me, anyway.
That's good.
Yeah, we got along very well. I usually have trouble with anyone, but, you know, you can't get along with everyone.
Mm-mm.
Some people are impossible. and we won't even go into who they are. Okay?
I would never ask that. That's not this type. This is not that type of program. Okay. Just one film fan to another. I just
don't understand why we can't make better films. I really don't. I mean, we've got all these examples for the last, I don't know how many years now. There's no excuse for this crap. You know, there really isn't. There's just no respect for the word, I think, and that's what the problem is. Enough of this slice of life action crap. Let's get some art back into it. You know, those wonderful moments when you hear a theme or you see even a few frames of a picture and you go, I want to watch this again. I can't wait to see this movie again. That's the kind of movie that we can still make. I mean, the idea that you have to spend $200 million for a picture and you still can't make anything but trash, it's absurd.
Do you get a lot of offers from, say, independent directors?
Well, I get them. It's just that even that, they're not very good. I'd love to work for Del Toro, for example.
Ooh.
He and I got along very well on Mimic. Mm-hmm. And he made promises, and I'm from the border of Mexico, and we both speak Spanish, and I just haven't heard from him. So I'm sure when something comes up, he'll call me. Because he's a sincere man, but I think he's terrific, and he started out as an independent. What was that wonderful story from Buñuel when he was approached? Do you remember that picture that Woody Allen made where they're standing in line and he talks, they're having an argument?
Annie Hall.
And Marshall McLuhan.
Marshall McLuhan is back behind the plant, If Life Were Only Like This.
Yes, well, he originally wanted Buñuel to do that.
Oh, really?
And it was going to be a different conversation, but it was going to... And he offered, you know, he offers everyone the same money, take it or leave it. But for Buñuel, who said, I can't do it, I'm busy, I'm working. And he said, well, I'll give you such and such amount of money. And he went up to $30,000, and which is outrageous for Woody Allen to offer.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a wealth of money for him to offer. And Buñuel still said, I really can't do it. And then he reflected and said, that was more money than my last film cost me to make. $30,000. Well, he's shooting in Mexico at the time. But
sure.
The point is, it doesn't have to be an expensive film to be a good one. You need a script. You need some good actors. And if you got a good script, you're going to get the actors.
Mm-hmm.
You get me just in a second. But anyhow, you do work for free. I mean, my theater work is practically, I have to underwrite it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Theater doesn't pay.
Oh, we know about underwriting here. This interview,
you know very well what I'm talking about.
This interview was made possible by memberships like yours. Thank you.
Love. I got no complaints. But I really think that, as I said before, I've got a lot of friends in this business, the long, long-lived friends who are just brilliant actors with all these chops, and they can't get arrested. I have to keep reminding them and myself what luck means in all odds. And I'm a very proud actor. I love my profession, but I'm also full of humility. I'm constantly grateful for these breaks I've been getting. And I'm absolutely sincere when I tell you that.
Well, I looking back at even the film work, there doesn't seem to be anything that is embarrassing. And I've seen people with lots of money and lots of acclaim, and they do something that's just... It's just downright silly and not in a complimentary way. And that, I don't think it's ever happened with you.
Keep talking. Listen, you're very nice. Thank you so much for this.
That's F. Murray Abraham. This weekend he will be at the Hilbert Circle Theater with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. He'll be narrating Lincoln's Portrait, back up by the ISO, doing, of course, the music of Aaron Copland. So until next week, we should be talking about Michael Moore's new film. We'll be definitely talking about the new film directed by Drew Barrymore with Ellen Page called Whip It. So thanks, F. Murray Abraham. Thanks to Melissa Davis working the board. Until next week. You can email me at msosi@wfyi.org and also go on Facebook. Until next time, go see a good movie, folks. You deserve it. Hopefully I'll see you at Jazz Fest. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI, HD2 The Point, and WFYI.org. Silent gravy, people! Sawdust.